Judy Waterman is one of countless American women whose plans and dreams were hijacked by an unplanned pregnancy and no way to get an abortion. In Judy's case, just months before the January 1973 Supreme Court decision in Roe v. Wade. Judy joins us now live to reflect upon that time and the very real threats to women's freedom and equality posed by the likely Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe. Judy, hi.
Hi.
Oh, I'm so glad you're there. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
That's very polite of you. Listen, we should share with our listeners that you and I have been friends for over 40 years now, if you can believe that. And over
You're
the years,
we're very old now.
Well, yes, we all are. It happens annually, moment by moment, to tell the truth. And you know, you and I have talked over the years, and again, just the other day, about your unplanned pregnancy in 1972, right before Roe became the law of the land. What strikes me as we get older is that more and more people all the time are too young to have any inkling of what it was like back then. And that makes stories like yours more important than ever. So first of all, before we get into your story, I wonder if you remember where you were and what you were doing when you first heard the news about that leaked Supreme Court decision.
Well, I was watching news as always, and I was just so, I mean, I expected it. I mean, from everything we had heard, I expected it. But I still was so sad, deeply saddened. I mean, I was angry to the point of tears.
Yeah. So did it bring back, I mean, your whole experience, of course, is right with you in your bones at all times. Can you tell us about what was going on in 1972?
Well, I will tell you that actually it happened a little bit earlier. It was 1969 because I had finished college. I had moved to D.C. for a while, and my boyfriend, who was actually a friend from high school, we really spent no time together at all. We contacted each other through letters, kept in touch that way, and he had gone to Vietnam, and he came back, and we got together, and we decided that we were going to break up, that it probably, you know, we probably were best just, you know, it was best for us just to be good friends. And of course, I came back here and got ready to start graduate school, got an apartment, you know, was ready to go and, you know, waiting for my period. And it didn't happen. So my father was in touch with a pharmacist, was a good friend of his. And so he tried to get me something that I could maybe, you know, hop in a hot tub and take this. And it was supposed to maybe, you know, help abort the baby, but that also didn't happen. So, you know, I ended up getting married.
Wow.
You know, who knows, you know, what I would have done had that not happened, although I can't say that I don't love all of my children. But,
Of course. Let me ask you this, though. So when you decided to break up, was that because you had plans to go to graduate school?
I think it was because we had seen very little of each other in person. I had known him in high school and we had just kept in touch. No, I just think that we just felt like we just weren't clicking that way. I mean, obviously we slept together.
Right.
You know, but, you know, it was a mutual thing. We just, you know, didn't feel like we wanted to carry on the relationship in any type of a physical way.
Right. So it wasn't sort of like, oh, I'm going to do this and therefore being involved with you doesn't fit, because presumably you could have continued a long distance relationship with him. So was this over a period of months of a certain amount of desperation as the pregnancy is growing in you and you're trying to find, was there any thought of abortion or was this?
Of course. But at that time there was only, I believe that abortions were legal in New York at that time, but I didn't have the finances to go to New York. And when I told him about it, he said, let's get married. And so, you know, that was not on my agenda, but that's what we did. I think I'm probably not the only person in that position.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think people who weren't around then, and that includes me, I was probably too young to fully notice it, but people who didn't experience those times, I don't know that they can fully appreciate the weight of social norms in those days.
Oh.
Just how much second wave feminism has profoundly changed things, but this was even before second wave really hit, or just at the beginning
Absolutely.
Of second wave feminism, and just how patronizing and infantilizing and shaming how much women and girls experience that as the daily air they breathe. It wasn't just abortion either, but the explicit and intentional control of women by their fathers, by their husbands, by society. Can you paint more of a picture of for us, for people who don't have a sense of that?
Well, okay, so I started college in 1964. So I had kind of grown up during the 50s, and it was such a puritanical period. Okay, like the show I Love Lucy, Desi and Lucy cannot sleep in the same bed. They have to sleep in twin beds. You know, right. So, you know, even what we saw, you know, on TV or, you know, in society and stuff, there was no Dr. Ruth. There was nothing like that. When I got to college, I learned that there was no birth control except for married women. Unmarried women could not have birth control because, of course, they're supposed to save themselves for marriage. Chastity was supposed to be the word of the day. Now, I went to an art institute and, you know, we were kind of a wild bunch there. So, you know, chastity was like probably not working out too well. at the same time, this whole cultural shift happens. The Vietnam War starts to ramp up. Timothy Leary is telling us all to tune in, turn on, and drop out. 1967 was like the summer of love and hate Ashbury. So, you know, all of this, everything was just changing. And, you know, people were, you know, every month or so, somebody else would have to leave school because they got pregnant. Now, eventually, there was I'm not sure how this happened, Kathy, but a woman contacted me who was from my hometown. She was an acquaintance, not a friend, but either she had tracked down or somebody had told her about an abortion provider in the city where I lived. So she came to town and I took her to get an abortion. And it was not in a back alley. It was in a motel suite. And so I stayed with her and then stayed with her afterwards during kind of her recovery period. And then she left. But, you know, I learned about her like years later. And she had married somebody that my family knew and she did not have any children. And it often made me sad to think that perhaps this was kind of a botched abortion, which had kept her from having kids later on. We can never know whether that's true or not, but still I, you know, still crosses your mind.
Sure. I can't remember where you went to college. So where was this that she got the
Kansas City?
In Kansas City. Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, then you were living in DC when you
after I graduated, I moved to DC for a while, and that was the time when my future husband like got out of Vietnam and came back, and he went there to see me, mm-hmm. and so that's where I probably conceived, and then when I came back to go, I decided no, I wanted to go to grad school. So when I came back to go to grad school, so I'd only really just taken a summer and a fall off. I was going to start the spring semester. So that's when I found out that I was pregnant.
So when you say came back, you were you back in Iowa at that point, or you went back to Kansas City? So in Iowa.
No, I came back. I came back to Iowa. I was going to go to grad school at the U of I.
At the University of Iowa?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And so the point being, you couldn't get an abortion anywhere in Iowa, and
I couldn't even get yourself to
Kansas City.
Well, I could have maybe. I mean, that's a little shorter drive, even though I didn't have a car. But I didn't even. I no longer knew. I didn't have a contact anymore.
For
the abortion service person. So that was all very hush hush, you know. I mean, this was not you weren't advertising in the newspaper that stuff. It was all kind of word of mouth.
And I know from being part of that second wave feminist movement. I mean, I remember. I think at some point, probably you and I went to Roe v. Wade on the anniversary in January of every year. There used to be rallies in celebration and affirmation of mm-hmm. Roe, to protect Roe. I remember my own down jacket for years had this sticker for supporting abortion rights for women. I wore that down jacket all the way into the 90s, and it still had this old sticker on it. But and we were probably
I think you should still have it. You should pull it out.
No, I think I eventually parted ways with that down jacket. But so we've got just a couple of minutes left, but I'm remembering my own experience of the, of like, so 74, I remember talking to, in my first job, talking with the women I work with, talking about how they had only recently just won the right to wear slacks to work. So when you were in college, did the control over women's bodies extend to a dress code? I mean, I know, like you say, an art institute isn't exactly your most privileged place.
No, indeed. In fact, one of the freshmen things that we were supposed to do was like out to like strip naked and roll in paint and then roll over this like giant canvas, like to make art. So no, we did not really have a dress code at Kansas City Art Institute. I don't know. Somebody, some girl came in like from Texas, and I don't know. She had like these racks and racks of clothes, which included gowns and stuff. But by the end of 2 weeks, she was wearing Blue Penny's work shirts and blue jeans, and that was pretty much the uniform there.
So there was a uniform. So we've got just under a minute left. Any parting thoughts that you'd like to leave us with?
Just that I am so deeply saddened that I feel like we're going back and that women are still being controlled. You know, it seems like we're controlled in small ways, but this just seems like going backwards, and it makes me very, very sad. And, yeah. You know, I'm not sure. Hopefully we can elect some pro-choice people and get this thing reversed.
You're not the only one. Thank you so much for coming on and telling the story. You know, it was a time of deep shame even to be pregnant and unmarried and have to get married. And you're brave, and
absolutely.
We appreciate it. And listen, so I'm going to thank you and say goodbye. And I'm going to say to listeners, if you've got a story like this to share from your own experience of pre-Roe days, please send us an email at hmm@mediasanctuary.org.